Don't like the DVD that your brother-in-law gave you to watch? Check out the millions of DVDs available on Amazon.com. Get the best deals on everything you need and help support Rob as a Podcast when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now he's the guy who wants to know, so how about that guacamole, Rob Sesternino? Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Breaking Bad recap, and we are going to be breaking down the episode number 3, or there's only 6 episodes left going into today. Then after tonight, there'll be 5. This is Breaking Bad Season 5, Episode 11, Confessions. And we'll be talking about it. And here is my partner in crime. Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how are you?
Rob, I have a confession to make. For the last 4 podcasts, I've been forced by this podcast kingpin to podcast for everyone. And it's against my will, and I don't know what I'm going to do about it. I'm a coward.
Oh, my goodness. So many confessions in one episode, a very appropriately named episode here of the Breaking Bad. So we got a lot to get to in this episode, talking about a very, very strong episode. I felt like last week's show was really a lot of setup, but now, boy, we are off to the races here with this home stretch of Breaking Bad. We want to hear from you guys. We are live. It is 10 p.m. here on the West Coast, which means it's 1 a.m. for you guys on the East Coast. And thank you guys for staying up late, Antonio included. I also see Alex Photopoulos in the chat room. He was on the East Coast. He stayed up late to watch this, so we appreciate that. If you are watching us or listening to us on Monday and you want to subscribe the audio podcast of this or the video feed, if you want the audio feed, go to robhaswebsite.com/iTunes, or for video, go to robhaswebsite.com/YouTube. All right, so and we have Scott St. Pierre. He's doing double duty on the podcast with us tonight. He is looking for your comments both on the YouTube page and if you use hashtag RHAP. So our top story at this hour, Antonio, Jesse is going loco. He's off the reservation. He knows about Brock, and he's pissed.
Yeah, he is beyond – I mean, this is something that's been brewing, this anger, this angst, or whatever it is, for multiple episodes, and it's going to come out in a fiery way, it looks like. Do we think that
Way? Are you like Giles from Whodunit?
A fiery way, Rob. Yes, absolutely. No, I'm a little concerned, quite honestly, that what's going to become of our friend Jesse here, because he's kind of crossed the Rubicon, as it were. I think he's really now he knows, and I don't know if there's going to be any pulling him back.
No, I don't think so. I think we have crossed a threshold here. Now, could we talk about just the mechanics of this? Now, this was a infamous moment in Breaking Bad history. The first time we had Huel taking the pack of cigarettes from Jesse. What exactly happened in the incident tonight where Jesse bumped Huel? Did Huel take the weed out of his pocket?
Yeah, I think if you, for those DVR-friendly fans out there, I think if you run it back, which I did, you'll see that Saul goes out into the lobby and says, I'm going to pick up some bags for cash. And it seems pretty evident now that at that point he probably said something to Huel, like, hey, you better empty his pocket out. And so then when Huel's standing in the door, you can actually see him pull the bag out of Jesse's pocket and put it in his.
Interesting. So that with the cigarettes, did anything happen with the cigarettes tonight, or Jesse pulled out a cigarette and just realized, oh, my God, this is what happened with everything else?
I think it was just a trigger, yeah. He just realized as he was getting into his pack of cigarettes, oh, I have weed. And then he kind of felt around in his pockets, and he thought, wait a minute, where's my weed? And then he thought about the cigarettes and thought about the weed. And if you'll remember, he had already kind of thought and sussed out that is what he thought had happened. He accused Walt of setting that up that very way. And Walt, through putting the cigarette in the Roomba, convinced Jesse otherwise. But you know, he was already thinking this. So I think it didn't take much to kind of get him right back to that point.
So there is no turning back for Jesse. I mean, you had to have been thinking as you're watching the episode that there's no chance that Jesse is going to disappear now for the final five episodes of the show, right?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you've got the flash forward in play. It's not clear exactly how they're going to get to that point or when. So I guess there's always a possibility that, you know, Jesse could go, and then by next episode, you know, we could end up somewhere where we're about 6 months down the line. But yeah, other than that, I don't think there's any way we're going to have Jesse disappear for any extended period, for sure. I agree with you.
Now, Jesse comes with a vengeance, and he is pouring out his gas can all over Walter White's house. Do you feel like the flash forward ruined anything for us here, that we have to say, well, we know that the fire is not going to be started in Walter White's house right now?
Yeah, I do think that. Although I wonder if maybe he'll start it and then maybe put it out, or maybe Walter White will show up and we'll get a confrontation, or something else will happen. But I do agree that kind of takes the wind out of the sails a little bit. I certainly don't think the house is going to burn down, right? And then been rebuilt. I really don't think that's going to happen.
You wouldn't think so, but God knows Walter White has the money to do it.
Sure. Now, why he would do it, I don't know.
Yeah, why he would do it is right. So what do we make of the Walter White confession here tonight? That was the other really fantastic moment from this episode. We saw Walter White recording a video, shades of the pilot of Breaking Bad as well, right?
Right, with the whole, my name is Walter Hartwell White, and here's where I live, and this is my confession. Very, very similar. Slightly different in wording, but definitely pretty much right on. And certainly, I think, meant to echo that, right? There's a lot of that. So I like the way they set it up, where you heard that part of it and really nothing else. You've seen with him and Skyler, this is the only way, we've thought about it, you know, and she says, are you sure? Like, she's trying to talk him out of something. And then we go to another scene only later to find out exactly what he'd done. So I thought that was really well set up.
Yeah, very well set up. I have to say that was sort of I can't help but root for Walter White at times. That was a very cool moment where he laid everything out and played it perfectly in that confession to frame Hank.
Yeah, again, it's almost like another clip show, right? Like, we're hearing all of these highlights of the series, and we're seeing them through a little bit of a different lens. And we're seeing, oh, yeah, you know what? If I were an outside observer, I might think that Hank actually had a hit on him from the cartel for different reasons than that he's a law enforcement officer. I mean, why him specifically, right? So I think that it was really interesting to see how all those key moments in the series kind of were tied together in such a way that really could be viewed differently when you just took a slightly different look at it. I thought that was phenomenal.
All right, well, let's take a look blow by blow through the episode. And, of course, we will describe a few of the things that we open the show with in more detail. So the show opened tonight, Antonio, where with Todd on the phone, and I'm a little confused as to where this whole Todd storyline is going, because Todd is in the cold open, and usually that's going to set up something that's going to pay off later in the episode, but that was it for Todd this week.
Yeah, and that really is, when I think about it, a lot more ominous, right? That, you know, wherever that operation that was going on with the underground bus was, I don't think it was in New Mexico. So now they're bringing this right back to Walt's doorstep, almost like a, you know, like a cat would bring a dead mouse and sit it, you know, and say, what do you think? Go ahead. So it's a little ominous the way they ended that cold open with the New Mexico sign. And I think it also really establishes these guys, you know, are real badasses. He's wiping blood off his shoe and just throwing it away. And he's just openly got, Todd's uncle has the swastika tattoo on his neck, and he's smiling at the waitress out of one side of his face, and the other side he's got a swastika tattoo. Like, I definitely think it's really ominous, and it concerns me that it didn't come back this episode, because it's definitely coming.
What time frame do we think this is? Is this in the past? Is it in the future?
Yeah, I think
is
that's
the present?
Really,
I mean,
almost,
yeah.
I think it's concurrent with, you know, pretty much right after the massacre, because the blood was still on the shoe. And so it's probably occurring, you know, concurrent with what's happening in the Walter White, you know, Skyler and Hank kind of showdown timeline.
And what does Todd want from Walter White?
It's hard to say. I mean, what do you think? I think he wants acceptance. I mean, I think he just wants this great person to recognize that he's capable of something and that he can, you know, really achieve and be part of something. I don't know. What do you think?
I think he needs a crash course in how to make the meth.
He does. So you think he's maybe just kind of like after, like, hey, come help me again. I really want to succeed.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's basically like he's trying to set up his operation, and I think he needs some consulting from Walter White Incorporated.
Well, and the problem with this is as he revealed in that story, he knows Walter White's name is Walter White. You know, they weren't given their names initially. They were, you know, told not to really ask him questions. It was yes, sir, or no, sir, Walt and Jesse. And so he, in that time, we saw in the montage at the end of season 5-1, he obviously learned Walt's name, and he's also no problem recounting the tales of their criminal activities. So he's definitely a liability, for sure. And if he's going to be needing stuff from Walt, that's going to present a problem for Walt, I think.
All right, so then after our cold open, then actually, one last thing about Todd. Do you feel like the stuff with Todd is being set up almost like when the cousins used to show up in the cold open, like back in the third season?
A little bit. I definitely think that about Todd's uncle and his friend, right? Because they go to the bathroom and they're talking about how the world's coming to an end and they hate the way society is. And he's combing his hair in the bathroom and combing his mustache. And I mean, these two guys are just, they're definitely, you know, social malcontents, out for blood. And they're very foreboding in a kind of offhanded way. I saw already people are comparing that scene to like a Tarantino scene. I think there's some accuracy to that. They're definitely meant to be this kind of like menace, just like the cousins were. So I think that's accurate.
All right, so we pick up where we left off from last week with Jesse in the interrogation room, and here comes Hank. And Hank actually comes in and is a bit of a soft hand with Jesse.
Yeah, much to Jesse's surprise, I think Jesse says, yeah, why don't you beat it out of me? That's your thing, right? You know, so I think Jesse probably expected slightly different, but the truth is, I think we kind of called it like Jesse just hates Hank, and I just don't think he's the right person to come at Jesse at all at this point.
Yeah. So they end up having their conversation interrupted by Saul Goodman, who comes in. Big night for Saul Goodman.
Yeah, big night. Big night for the come over, for sure.
Yeah, huge night for Saul Goodman. And he did not disappoint. He delivered at every turn.
Yeah,
great job by Saul.
At one point, I thought that, he might be ending up in Belize or perhaps headed there at the hands of we're skipping ahead a little bit. But, yeah, he always manages to worm his way out, that Saul Goodman.
Yeah. So he ends up getting Jesse out of jail and out of the predicament that he was in. And eventually sets up a meeting between Walt and Jesse. But before we get to that, what's this, Antonio? A Walter Jr. sighting?
A Walter Jr. sighting. I couldn't believe it. He lives. He lives. Flynn lives.
He lives, and not even just to eat breakfast. He's apparently a pawn in the game of trying to steal him to go to Marie's house. Can you steal, like, an 18-year-old?
Yeah, I mean, probably not against their will, but I think if you trick them, maybe. I don't know. I probably shouldn't talk too much about the things you can do to trick 18-year-olds. It sounds a little creepy. Yeah, it sounds a little creepy, I think. Yeah, I know. I don't want to talk about it.
So, you know, it's kind of a recurring theme in this episode that Walter, when he goes into manipulation mode, he goes into, like, the Malcolm in the Middle mode, where he, like, talks in the same sort of voice and tone. He does it with Walter Jr. He does it with Jesse later. He did it with Jesse a couple of weeks ago talking about Mike, and he's just like, there's this... there's this thing going on, and I wanted you to know about it because I love you so much. And that's like when you know Walter White is up to no good, when he starts talking in like the very sweet, caring voice.
Yeah, it was sad. It took him all of about 5 minutes into his appearance on this episode to just get rid of any goodwill that he had for his revelations on the floor of the bathroom in the last episode. Like, he went right into, as you're pointing out, the manipulative dad mode. And, now, well, there's just a little spot on my lung, and, you know, we're going to take care of it because that's what we do. Yeah, oh, thanks a lot, Dad. Yeah, I'm going to stay with you, Dad. I'm not going anywhere, Dad. Let's have some breakfast, Dad. Exactly.
You do a very good manipulative Walter White.
Oh, thank you. I've been practicing at local restaurants and libraries. It seems to be going over pretty well.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we have the whole Hank comes home from work, and he did not tell any. He reports to Marie that he didn't tell anybody at work what he knows about Walter, which, of course, it is able to give us Walter's move here to be able to finger Hank in all of this.
Yeah, and it's almost like Hank doesn't want to drop it on anyone's desk without a big bow on it, right? Because so much of it will be linked to him, and as he'll find out, more so than I think he even anticipated will be linked to him. But he definitely is so ashamed of his failure to see this that he's just not going to be able to tell anybody about it. And, you know, Marie can't seem to understand that, but Hank's coming home pouring himself whiskey and just drowning himself in a bottle. It's really bad.
Yeah. So we get a little tidbit of Walter recording the confession, and then we come back after a commercial with Walt and Skyler at the Guardunia's Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, that's what I think he said. It sounded almost Italian. He said like Guardunios or something like that. And that guy, what was his name? Trent?
I don't know. I didn't write it down the waiter's name.
Well, how dare you, Rob? How dare you?
My bad. So, yeah, so they're at the restaurant, and a Mexican restaurant, very, very looks like a fun place to go and hang out. And they start having the conversation, and it looks like Walt and Skyler are trying to be civil, but Hank is just fuming.
Yeah, and what do we make of the fact that Marie wasn't wearing purple here? She was wearing black. I thought that, you know, that was very interesting. This is almost like a funeral for her.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris, it's the happiest. Go ahead.
Oh, Chris Berger in the chat room says, you guys are crazy. Didn't you hear the revelation that Hank is a criminal mastermind? You want Walt Jr. living with that drug kingpin?
Well, it's a fair point. He's already kidnapped Walt Jr. once, apparently. So I certainly wouldn't want poor Flynn to suffer that fate again.
No, we would not.
I mean, what would Lewis think?
So the waiter is very funny here, interrupting the conversation between Hank and Walt and Skyler and Marie. And basically, Skyler, she almost gives a confession to whatever you think is happening isn't happening anymore, which is not ideal to probably say that.
Yeah, Walt kind of gives her a back off or kind of no, Skyler, no, but she feels obligated to say it. And I think the whole undertone of this whole scene is I feel like Skyler wasn't necessarily on board with the whole confession angle. And Walt said, well, we'll give it a shot. We'll talk to him. And, you know, there's a lot of knowing glances between Walt aimed at Skyler, where he's kind of like saying, see, I told you, throughout the whole scene. So if you kind of watch it again, I think you'll see that kind of playing out through the course of the scene. Like, Walt is probably there really just to mollify Skyler and get her to buy into this whole confession angle, knowing that Hank and Marie will just not only not accept it. Marie tells him to send himself to Belize at one point. I mean, that's really a bridge too far for old Marie.
Well, let's get into that. Marie tells Walt, why don't you just go and kill yourself? And for Marie, that's a good ties up all the loose ends. You know, Skyler gets her life back. We don't have to worry about Walt anymore. Hank can close this case. But nobody else at the table seems to like that idea.
Yeah, even including Hank, right? Hank says, step up and be a man. There's no other option. Like, Hank wants Walt to accept it and turn himself in and really take responsibility for what he's done. And Marie just wants him to kill himself.
Yeah. I mean,
there's not even agreement there in the Schrader household as to the best way for Walter to proceed with his, you know, acceptance of this stuff.
Yeah. So then they end up having sort of a stalemate. And Walter leaves the DVD on the table. And now, do they need Walter Jr.'s help to burn that DVD, you think?
Well, I don't know. It's a very good question. I should hope not. I mean, maybe he told him like, "Hey, hey, son, we just kind of wanted to get this family video together for Uncle Hank. You know, if you could put it together, that would be great." I don't know. Maybe that's what was happening. I have no idea. I'd love to see the kind of unseen moments in Breaking Bad like that, to the extent that they exist.
Yeah. So then Hank comes home and he puts on this DVD, and boy. I love that they gave us the whole thing also. That was really fantastic that we got to watch the whole thing from Hank's perspective.
Yeah, my mouth was on the floor. I mean, I was like Hank and Marie the whole time. And I just couldn't believe everything that came pouring out. You know, like I said, the details that all tied in, the ride along, you know, how Walt was working for Gus Fring, how there was a hit on Hank, and then at one point Walt said, "Well, I guess you'd call it a hit." I'd never heard of this sort of thing. I think it's a hit. Like, it was really, really masterful performance by Walter White there.
All right, let me take some questions here. Alex Fotopoulos wants to know, could Hank prove that Walter's confession is a lie by actually having a physical copy of the DVD, or could Walter make a believable claim that Hank stole it?
Yeah, I mean, I think either's in play, right? Like, I do think that, you know, Marie wants, as soon as the confession's over, Marie wants, you know, she wants Hank to go right away and show it to, you know, the higher-ups and say, look what happened. And, you know, by getting ahead of it, she thinks that maybe he can claim that, you know, I have this copy of it and, you know, I can tell the story first. But on the other hand, Walt could absolutely say, you know, he knew I was going to do this. He took it from me. It absolutely puts it into he said, she said, or he said territory. And that's got to be a net win for Walter for sure.
Yeah. And Levi Corville says Hank was not having an A1 day, which probably not at this point.
No, not at all. No, not in any way. Not even steak sauce style.
Yeah. And it even gets worse for Hank because then he finds out that Marie had accepted all this money for his treatment of $177,000 from the gambling winnings, which you would think at this point Marie would realize maybe a little early on that this is very fishy.
Yeah, for sure. Although that number, that second seven, right? Like, he didn't say around 170,000. He knew to the number, like, 177,000. That's a real knife in the gut. I mean, that is like him really twisting it and saying, like, this is absolutely exactly how much money it was. Mm-hmm. And that really stuck it to Hank. And I don't know if Walt knew that Hank didn't know, but really putting it out there like that, that was it for Hank. It took the wind right out of his sails. He said, I'm cooked. That's it, you know?
So then we get the scene out in the desert where we have Jesse and we have Saul, and here comes Walt, and we have this whole thing, and we go back into caring, nice guy Walt mode, and he tells Jesse that, hey, maybe you just want to get a clean start. And we talked about Saul's friend recently on the podcast, and we wanted to know why Walt doesn't consider this. And I'd still like to know why Walt doesn't consider this, but he says, you know, he sort of just brushes it off, but says, for Jesse, this is the right thing to do. Fresh start, clean slate.
Yeah, tabula rasa, right? Like, I do think that on some level, Walt's ego is really kind of getting in the way. Like, I think now he really wants to kind of win. He wants to stick it in Hank's face. I mean, I think initially he had some survival instincts, and that still comes into play from time to time. But he's really, in this episode with the whole confession thing, really saying to Hank, like, I don't have to step up and be a man, or there's more ways to be a man than accepting what you're responsible for. I'm going to be the kind of man that gets one over on you. On the other hand, for him to be able to do that, he's got to convince Jesse that the right thing to do is kind of walk away. Jesse, you're still young, you know, you can meet a nice girl, maybe.
Yeah, and in fairness, Walter did warn Hank to tread lightly.
He did. So anything that happens now is totally, you know, it's totally fair play. He's already been warned.
Yeah. So basically, Jesse calls Walt out finally and says, will you just stop working me? And that's fair. That's pretty fair.
Yeah, it's really fair. I mean, it's been coming for a very long time. And, you know, it's really nice to recognize that Jesse has some sort of self-awareness that he's been worked for this long of a time. And it's really a key moment for that character, I think, to break away from, you know, the whole mode where he's letting Walter manipulate him the whole time. And I thought that was really good. I think that it tied in nicely. You know, at the beginning of the scene, unfortunately, we were treated to another scene of a tarantula in the desert, but that had to kind of probably tie back a little bit, you know, to viewers and remind them of Drew Sharp and that whole incident. So all of these things are a good way of putting us in Jesse's mind a little bit. And so it's good for Jesse finally to kind of, I think, step up like this.
Yeah, I thought we were going to see Todd when we saw the tarantula.
Oh, God, maybe just standing off on the side, like with the bottle on the ground, just kind of looking up and smiling. That would have been terrifying.
Todd is so nice.
He's just a nice guy, sir. He really is.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah.
So over back at the police station, Hank is apparently sending people out to trail Jesse Pinkman. And Gomi is getting a little pissed. Gomi, don't play that.
I don't think so. Gomi, don't play that. Exactly. Yeah. It's unfortunate, really. Hank is just, he's so single-minded. He's not even, Gomi's his buddy, like since episode one even. So it's really hard to see Hank this kind of strung out at work, for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Now, do you think there's any way out for Hank? What if Hank makes a video confession and says, hey, this is Hank Schrader, and I'm recording this confession because my brother-in-law is a kingpin in a meth lab, and he has made a videotape that is saying that he is blackmailing me and was accusing me of being a kingpin in a drug lab. And if you're seeing this video, then I'm probably dead.
Yeah, and then Walt can make another one that, oh, well, if you're seeing this video, then I saw my brother-in-law's video before I died, and I had to make another one to explain to you what his video was saying. And we could just go back and forth. This sounds like something Bob Odenkirk might do on Mr. Show.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be good for Saul Goodman. So we're back to in Saul's office. Jesse is going to go through with it, going to go through with the idea of just going away. And Saul suggests going to Florida. Jesse wants to go to Alaska. Any significance to Alaska?
I wondered that as well. I mean, I think the only significance is he's just so at the end of his rope. He just, whatever pops into his head seems like a good idea. I mean, he kind of even convinces himself. He's like, oh, Alaska. Like, yeah, Alaska. You know, it's a good idea. I also think maybe there's some like sense of isolation, like, he feels probably like he's harmed so many people and been responsible for so much destruction. I think there's probably some appeal to going off into the middle of nowhere and living in an isolationist lifestyle, you know?
It like Superman in a fortress of solitude.
Just like Superman. And Jesse's kryptonite is blue crystal.
Yeah. So we have Jesse lighting up a big joint in Saul's office. Did you find that odd that he just decided to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he already sparked up in the waiting room a couple episodes before, and clearly he's in a mode where he needs to self-medicate a lot. So maybe he just felt like it was the right time. You know, sometimes you gotta kick back and spark out, man.
Yeah, why not? I guess he figured that he would, wherever he was going, he wasn't gonna know a weed guy there. It might have been tough to know who was holding. So I guess it was one more time for the road.
Far from the first time someone is sparked up in a lawyer's office. I can assure you of that, Rob.
Okay. We'll leave that what would you call that? Is that confidentiality, privilege?
Absolutely. It's attorney-client privilege, right.
Attorney-client privilege. So we saw Saul go back into his desk of phones. He gives Jesse a Hello Kitty phone. Do you think that will the Hello Kitty phone be Chekhov's Hello Kitty phone at some point?
Maybe like Jesse's going to meet a 15-year-old Japanese girl at a local establishment, and he's really going to catch her eye with his Hello Kitty phone, and then unfortunately she's going to get run over by Walt Aztec. I don't know how that'll play out, but somehow maybe the Hello Kitty phone will. I doubt it though. I think it was just a nice little Easter egg that fans saw a couple episodes previous when we saw inside Saul's cell phone drawer. There's a Hello Kitty phone in there, and then of course it comes back into play with Jesse. And later on in the episode, there's also a little pink, like a compact phone that Saul is calling, you know, Walter on. It's just, where is Saul getting this collection of hilarious phones from?
They are hilarious. Very good phone collection.
We love it.
So Jesse is sitting there waiting to get picked up by the guy who's very punctual. And then all of a sudden he takes the cigarettes out of his pocket and realizes what's going on. Now, what is that brand of cigarettes that Jesse smokes? That seems like an off brand.
Yeah, I don't really know. I think it starts with an R, but I'm not 100%. You know, it could be like a sometimes there are copyright issues in shows, although this one has the 5-hour energy right there by the checkout counter at the A1.
Is that product placement?
I'm sure it is. And maybe there's an issue with cigarettes. I know that, you know, there's sometimes an issue with alcohol and tobacco advertising. So there could be an issue with smoking a particular brand of cigarettes, although that didn't stop Mad Men from talking about Lucky Strike on and on and on. So maybe they just don't want to pay for it or can't get somebody to pay for it.
So 5-Hour Energy Drink does paid product placement on Breaking Bad. Is that like almost like one step away from meth, the 5-Hour Energy Drink?
Well, it's a nice legal. It's no more energy than a cup of coffee, Rob. I mean, come on.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
so
that's
they'll
good.
Have you believe until you drink one and then drive your car off the road at 4 a.m. because you're so amped.
Whoa! I only drink half of one. I can't handle
the
whole one.
The 2.5-hour energy.
Yeah, I do 2.5-hour energy. so okay, so we have some questions about this. Sammy Myers has a question, which I can see for you. Let's go with. How do you think Jesse jumped from realizing the ricin was stolen by Saul to figuring out Walt poisoned Brock with the Lily of the Valley? It seems like a lot of people are hung up on this, myself included.
Yeah, and like I said, a big thing for me was I remembered that Jesse had already kind of theorized that Walt was involved with the theft of the cigarette. And although I'm not sure that he's put together every single detail of how everything was done at this point, I do think that he put together enough to know that Walt was responsible for the removal of the cigarette, and therefore Walt was somehow behind the poisoning, whether he knows to what extent or how that all worked out. I don't think that's necessary for him to know that his initial concerns that he's probably been running in the back of his mind ever since it happened were absolutely valid. And that therefore it's not that big of a jump for him because it's something he's already thought about.
Is it possible that the Kardashians could hire Huel to take away Lamar Odom's crack?
Yeah, it's certainly possible. You know, you never know where Huel might turn up next. When you said Kardashians for a minute, I thought we were going to go back to the Star Trek universe.
No, those are Cardassians.
Yes.
And I thought you were going to talk about Robert Kardashian being a very great,
yeah,
the,
absolutely.
Original
the pedigree,
Saul Goodman.
The legal pedigree, right, yeah.
Yes. No, that we'll say that for Rob has a Deep Space Nine podcast when we talk about the Cardassians. So now Jesse is going loco. How did Walt know Jesse wasn't going to come to? Well, let's talk about when Jesse goes back to Saul's office. Did you think that at any point Jesse was going to kill Saul?
For at least a split second, I did. I'd like to know what your thoughts are. There's a lot of talk going back and forth that the idea that there might be a Better Call Saul spinoff of Breaking Bad, which has been floated by Vince Gilligan and AMC, that somehow spoils the fact that Saul survives the show. But I really thought for you know a couple seconds there that Jesse was absolutely going to pull the trigger. I don't know what your thoughts are. Do you feel like we're predestined to seeing Saul survive the show, or do you think his life is in jeopardy at any point?
I think his life is in jeopardy. I still feel like there could be, you know, I could see them just, they were yanking our chain with this Saul Goodman spinoff show. I mean, do you really see Vince Gilligan working on the Saul, you know, a sort of a wacky Saul Goodman TV show spinoff?
No, he certainly, I mean, I can see him producing it and letting a couple of the writers from the Breaking Bad writers room just kind of run wild with it and let Odenkirk kind of produce it and, you know, have a say in it as well. And I guess in that regard, it could be a prequel of like, you know, Saul Goodman's adventures before Walter White ever came into the picture. But yeah, I'm not buying the fact that it's definitely going to happen. I think that Saul's in jeopardy anytime he's around any of these people for sure.
Yeah.
And I think Saul knows that at this point.
Yeah, I can't see it ending well for Saul Goodman. I mean, really, once Walter and Hank ran into Saul, that was where things really started to get out of hand for them.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me because that scene, going back to the scene in the desert where Walt drives up and meets Jesse, when we first get there with the spider and everything, Saul is talking to Jesse, and Saul says to Jesse, you know, if I were you, I'd be more nervous. And I don't know if that's if we're meant to think that Saul expects that Walter is going to be red hot, and Saul is really afraid of Walter, so he thinks Jesse should be afraid of Walter, or if Saul's trying to wind Jesse up to kind of put them at, you know, at opposition, because once Walter's out of the business, now that Saul's got his final payment or whatever, Saul doesn't want him alive or around anymore, so he wants to have these two guys at odds. I don't really know, but Saul's definitely a player, so anything's possible. He knows he's in jeopardy.
I just think a Saul Goodman show sort of poo-poos on the legacy of one of the greatest dramas of all time.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't think there's a way to do it unless they really did it almost in a totally different kind of realm and made it like a prequel so that it didn't have any tie-ins at all. Because if it was after Breaking Bad, I think everyone would be looking for, you know, oh, well, what's this mean? Or what's the aftermath here? What's the tie-in there? So I just don't think that's a good choice for anybody. But as a prequel, maybe. They could work it in a different universe.
Sure. So when Jesse is on the lam here, he's going crazy, Hank doesn't seem too concerned he's going to the car wash.
Yeah, I don't think anybody, you know, you mean Walt doesn't seem too concerned.
I'm sorry, Walt.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because it's really funny when Walt comes tearing ass up to that car wash and you see him like run out of the car and get to the door just in a frenzy. And then right before he gets to the door, he calmly composes himself and he walks in. Oh, hello, Skyler. I just need to check the soda machine. Something was loose. And, you know, he's just very, you know, and Skyler's not paying attention at all. Like she's so used to being lied to by Walt at this point that I don't think she really takes anything he says in that sort of manner seriously at this point. She just is completely basically ignoring him.
Do we take anything away from Walter's gun appeared to be frozen?
I don't know if there's any symbolism there. I haven't had, you know, the time to really put anything together to think about that. You know, maybe it's just kind of metaphorically his kind of this part of his life has been on ice for a while. And it certainly, I don't think there's going to be any issue with it working. I think there's plenty of evidence out there to suggest that you can freeze a weapon and it'll work fine later. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if that is a Chekhov's gun type gun or not, or if it's just kind of meant to show that he feels very jeopardized at this point.
Now, Jesse's plan to, burn Walter's house down seems a little premeditated. I mean, so Jesse's like in a frenzy. He's like, oh my God, Mr. White, I'm so mad. I'm going crazy. Okay, I'm going to go to the gas station. I'm going to buy one of those gas things. I'm going to fill it up, and then I'm going to go light his house on fire. Like, right? It doesn't seem like he's got to make a stop to go and do that. Yeah.
Got to get the right container. Yeah. Exactly. Oh, it's interesting. The thing about Jesse's so weird because even when he went into that office of Saul, you know, he still calls him Mr. White, right?
Yeah,
he's like,
it's very
asshole
too formal.
Mr. White. It's like he's still very in his head, very wrapped up in this whole thing. So who knows what's going through Jesse's mind at any moment to moment kind of thing. I mean, hell, last episode he didn't even speak. So, you know, I think it from moment to moment, Jesse Pinkman's in a million different places.
I think so. I want to start taking your questions in a moment here. Use the hashtag RHAP or post them on our YouTube page at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. But where do you think we're going next week? Okay, Jesse's in the house. He's pouring out the gasoline. We suspect that he is not going to light a match. We also suspect that Walt's probably not going to walk in and kill Jesse next week. So where do we go from here?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, could it be a situation where Walter Jr. walks in and Jesse feels very embarrassed and kind of walks away? Or could it be an issue where because I've thought about it a little bit already, and I just don't see. I mean, we could get a situation where Walt comes right into his house and has a confrontation with Jesse. But I don't see the state that Jesse's in. I don't see that at all being something that Walt can manipulate his way out of at this point. I mean, I'm happy to be proven wrong because I'm sure if that were to happen, it would be another classic Heisenberg moment. But I just don't see that going very well for Walter right now. Jesse's armed and angry and really in a frenzy, as you pointed out. So I think something will happen to cause Jesse to kind of back down. And Jesse will kind of back down, but he's really in a bad place. And unfortunately, I don't know that this ends well for Jesse. I don't think they're going to kill him next episode, and they may not even kill him in the run of the series. But this is the kind of thing that's really hard to walk back from. I mean, this is one of the top two or three things we talked about in our first podcast before this season about the loose ends. I mean, this is one of the big loose ends. Would Jesse ever find out that Walt poisoned Brock? And he's really kind of put it together on his own. So I don't know that there's any turning back from this in their relationship.
Well, the real question is, Jesse going to find out that Walt also let Jane die? That could...
I mean, what happens then, right? Does he fill his entire pool with gasoline and just throw a match in there? I mean, like,
yeah, I don't know.
He'd really have to premeditate that one. He'd have to get a whole truck and back it up and get the hose all tied in properly and really get it going.
I mean, I sort of have a theory when, you know, for those of you guys that are in relationships, I am a married man. I kind of subscribe to the theory of, like, when you're already in trouble, it's like, you know, if somebody throws you in the pool, you know, you're already wet. Somebody can't throw another bucket of water on you. So, you know, get more wet. You're already soaked. So I kind of feel like, that's the best time to sort of, if you're already in trouble, just sort of like do, you know, you can't, you know what I'm saying here?
Yeah. So you're saying, The best thing that can happen is Walt will get home. He'll see what Jesse's doing, and he'll say, "Jesse, I let Jane die."
Yes, yes. Right. He's already pissed. He's already mad already.
It's not going to get any worse, right? Yeah, they may as well.
Yeah. Oh my God! Are you going? Like, he's already is all worked up already.
Yeah, yeah. What's he going to do? Right. What's he going to burn his house down? Oh, wait. He's already kind of doing it.
The house is already burned down. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
All right. So let's take some questions here from you guys. We want to hear what you guys have to say. #RHAP. Scott St. Pierre is pulling questions here late here at night on a Sunday night. Let's start off with Zach Lynch, who wants to know, do you think the flash forwards take place after the show's ending?
I think it's interesting. I think it could fill in gaps that we won't necessarily see on the episodes. So I think if we get to there in the timeline, maybe we'll recognize, oh, that's where Walt went and got the gun. Or, oh, I know he went and got the ricin, like, contemporaneously. Like, we may not see the same scenes again. But as for do they take place after the show's ending, I don't see how that would really tie in unless we get a couple more flash forwards to really kind of put the pieces together.
Right. Here's one from... This is from a 101 Barrel. I thought Jesse was going to want to go to New Zealand as a callback to season 2. Jesse and Jane plan to run away to New Zealand. Better New Zealand than Belize, though, right?
Yeah. When, you know, the whole Hobbits and the Lord of the Rings and the Shire, I think Jesse could find a nice peaceful home in New Zealand. That wouldn't be a bad deal at all.
Yes, very, very peaceful. Okay. This is from... Patricia Vargo, has anyone seen the clues someone posted in YouTube from Say My Name that Hank will end up killing himself? All right, well, rather than that, you haven't seen that specific video, right?
I haven't seen that specific video, but I do know what is being talked about there. There's, you know, when they're shaking down Mike Ehrmantraut and they're at his house, he's watching an old movie in the background and, you know, there's the scene that's happening is about cops killing themselves. They kind of like, right as they say the line on the screen, there's a cut to Hank. And it's not in a so obvious way that it's made to be obvious. It's very subtle. And, you know, if it ends up being true, it certainly will be, you know, have been set up. But that said, I don't know if that's what they intended. You know, a lot of times when they set stuff up like this, it's just to make you wonder if it could happen, not to necessarily reward you to, you know, for when it does happen. So I think this one could go either way.
Do you subscribe to that theory? Do you think Hank will kill himself?
Well, I will say each week I think we get a little closer to that. I don't know what your feelings are, but, you know, he's certainly reaching the end of his rope. I don't know. It doesn't seem like he would necessarily feel that way. I mean, it's the coward's way out, and I think Hank Schrader would tell you that. So I don't think he feels truly beaten yet. But he may end up causing some harm through his pursuit of Walter. And if he does that, I could see him feeling that was the right way to go. But
I don't see Hank killing himself. I have to be honest.
I don't see it either, but I think we could get there.
Okay. All right, next question. This one is from... Mr. D.B. Cooper, 456. And now I have a theory. Walter is getting the ricin from the house in episode one in order to show Jesse the ricin and maybe take it in front of Jesse to kill himself. Would that buy anything for Walt and Jesse's relationship to show him the ricin?
Show me the ricin. I don't know. I think that, you know, Brock wasn't poisoned with ricin. Jesse knows he was poisoned with Lily of the Valley. So in that regard, I don't know that it buys him anything. To show him that he, you know, still has it, all that shows is another lie. You know, he didn't go and flush it down the toilet like he said. You know, it really compounds the lie. So I don't think that makes Jesse happier. Now, when it comes to, you know, ingesting it in front of Jesse to mollify Jesse or somehow make him feel like, okay, you know, I've taken responsibility for this. Maybe there's some truth to that. I don't know. We did speculate that maybe Walt was keeping the ricin for himself. I feel like there's a million other ways to do it if that's what he wanted to do. I think he's doing it, keeping it now for like a more high profile, sneaky kind of kill. I don't know if that's a Lydia. I don't know exactly who that is. But I don't think it's for himself. So I don't think that we'll see that.
Okay. This is from Real BG Low. With all these crazy unexpected moments, is the only guarantee for the last couple of episodes is that Walt Jr. will eat breakfast? Is that all we can bank on here?
They've got to give us one more, right? I mean, they've got to give us one more great, luxurious Walt Jr. breakfast. Maybe like a grand slam with like the extra meat. Like that would be really good, I think. So hopefully we can get that.
Antonio, I can't remember if we talked about it on this podcast or if I was talking about this with one of my friends during the week last week. Did we talk about the irony that could take place of that Walt Jr.'s, Walt's daily number lotto ticket, where if he hits on the lotto ticket that he bought?
Yeah, we kind of mentioned that somebody could just grab it off the fridge and be like, I turned it in. Yeah, it's $20.
That.
I think a lot of people are laughing about the possibility of that. And it seems like Walter Jr. would be the perfect person to bumble his way into that.
Yeah.
So if it were me, that ticket would not be on the refrigerator.
That would
sure.
be the great O. Henry ending to Breaking Bad.
Yeah, that we've got a couple O. Henry references on the podcast here. I think that would be a nice little twist.
Like
that, or when Walter sells his hair, someone buys him a comb. You know, either way, really.
This is from XCZGZI.
Have fun with that.
Yeah. Who gives a better performance, Walter in his confession or Dan in his funeral? I feel like these things are not totally dissimilar. I mean, I kind of felt like Dan in his funeral sort of like spun events in a different way to get himself out of a very sticky situation. And I feel like that's kind of like what Walter White did on this confessional.
Yeah. And Walter kind of flipped the house a little bit. So it's interesting to see. We kind of cast our Breaking Bad with people at the beginning, and Dan was definitely a prime candidate for Walter White. So that this is really just solidifying that, I think.
Well, I think Dan can also do the Walter White voice also, the very soft-spoken, you know, let me try to give you my pitch here.
Yeah, I'm looking out for you. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because I care about you.
Yeah, this is for you.
All right, Scott, I'm sorry, this is from Scott St. Pierre. Did we learn who wrote Heisenberg on Walt's living room wall? Do we have any information about that yet?
I don't know. Maybe it was Jesse. You know, like maybe Jesse was involved with that. I don't know that we've got any other direct link, and I'm not sure we will ever learn that. But you know, it certainly could be Jesse that does it. That that may be something that he revisits at a later date. You know, he wants to burn that house down somehow.
I think it was Badger.
Oh well, you know, it was spelled correctly, so I'm not sure it was Badger.
All right, one or two more questions. This is from Mr. D.B. Cooper. I think the moment Jesse realized the ricin was pickpocketed from him could have been done better. I guess that's the one minor nitpick that we have here tonight. Seemed like a bit of a leap of faith, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think Aaron Paul did a great job with it, you know, with kind of looking and the realization and, you know, I think it worked with the car pulling up and then him not getting in because I think he really thought about it. And I do think it plays well in the context of where he's sitting on a roller, you know, a merry-go-round, just kind of looking up and you know, he's been in a very dark, contemplative place for very, very many episodes in a row here. So I don't think it took a lot for him to get there, like I said. But I definitely think it was a little confusing. I know I watched it with my mom. She was a little confused. And, you know, I'm sure there were other people that were very confused about, you know, exactly what was going through his head at that moment.
Yeah. All right. Last question. This is from Scott St. Pierre. Will Todd be the loose lips that sinks Walt's ship?
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit at the beginning here. I think that there definitely is a major liability there, for sure. I think that that's a major problem for Walt. And I think that, you know, Walt kind of thought maybe he could just back away from the game, you know, and just, I just want to be a, you know, I want to work at a car wash and not do much else, you know. Like, I think he really wanted to just kind of, like, live that life. And, you know, here comes Lydia right into the car wash saying, you know, it's not working out. Here comes Todd blowing him up on his cell phone like, hey, I just wanted to let you know. Here comes Todd telling all his stories to the white supremacists of, you know, upper New Mexico. It's like, you can't lie down with the dogs that much and not expect to get a little dirty and not be able to get it off. And I think it's going to be a problem that Walt's going to have to deal with, and that may well be what the machine gun is for. I think that seems to be the popular theory right now, that, you know, he's coming back to get the machine gun because he's got to take on Todd and Todd's uncle. That certainly seems plausible at this point.
What sort of chances do you give Walter White with a machine gun versus Todd's uncle's gang?
It depends on, you know, the turf, right? Like, if they're posted up at a fort, you know, and he's got a nice little, you know, the vantage over the fort, he can just kind of pick them off. I mean, I don't know, you know, I guess it just really depends on the, what do you think his best opportunity would be? What's the best circumstance like that for Walt? They're walking through his car wash and he could just stand at the end and pick them off one by one.
Yeah. Every time Walter White thinks he's out, something just keeps pulling him back in.
Yeah, he absolutely is. You know, that's, and that's true. You know, that this movie borrows from Scarface. It certainly is borrowed from The Godfather like that. So, you know, I think that's something that you can't ignore. He can try to get away all he wants. There's no guarantee it'll happen.
All right, Antonio, this was a very fun look at Breaking Bad, Season 5, Episode 11. Only 5 episodes left to go. Can you believe it?
It really is kind of terrible, and it's hard to accept, but we'll deal with it when it comes.
Very sad. All right. So next Sunday night, we'll be back to talk about the next episode of Breaking Bad. If you want to subscribe to the audio feed of this podcast, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/Breaking Bad to get the audio feed of this. Or if you want to catch the video feeds, go to robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. Next podcast coming up on robhasawebsite.com is our 20-team fantasy football league live draft, or the star-studded event. Rob has a fantasy football league 3. If you want to join us, it will be a fun show. I'm sure we'll talk some Survivor, we'll talk some Big Brother, we'll talk some football along the way. That's going to be at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll also have a lot of the owners from the league who are listeners of Rob as a podcast, plus reality stars. There could be some former NFL players that are joining us along the way too. So that should be a fun time on Monday night for the 20-team live draft on robhaswebsite.com. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes, Antonio.
20 teams, Rob. I mean, somebody's going to end up with multiple Jets starting on their team, and I just don't think that's going to be good for anybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not going to be good for anybody.
Yeah, I sat through that Jets-Giants preseason game on Saturday night. That was that was quite an ordeal.
Yeah, second half really went well for Rex Ryan. So, you know, no mistakes, no anything, no problems.
Can I just say one quick thing about this episode? If you didn't care about this, then we'll see you soon on the next podcast. But for the 2% of the people who are listening to this that even know what we're talking about, I mean, people are making, like, the media that covers the Jets gets so indignant about every little thing that happens. And, I mean, they're talking about Mark Sanchez like he is, you know, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers. And the writers that follow the Jets are like, how on earth do you have Mark Sanchez playing behind second and third team offensive linemen? Are you crazy? It's like, Mark Sanchez is the second string quarterback on this team. So, We're the best thing that could happen to the Jets is Geno Smith starts 16 games, and you find out that he is either the answer or just as good. He is not the answer, and we need to draft a new quarterback with the top three pick that we will have when we find out he is not the answer.
Yeah, it is interesting because, you know, Geno Smith is a third round pick, right? So it's not like
second.
Second round pick. But the contracts are very different than they used to be in the NFL. So it's not like their entire future is mortgaged in Geno Smith. So there's guys like Brandon Whedon in Cleveland. There are guys that are kind of on 1 year floats right now, and they can get turned around pretty quick. And so if Geno starts the whole year and he doesn't show any progression, they can absolutely draft a quarterback next year and be worse for it. So I agree with you completely in that regard. And of course the New York media is going to be all up in arms about what did Rex do and they screwed it up, because that's what they do. That they're going to, you know, 3 weeks ago they were probably all over Sanchez saying he was terrible, he was in no position to lead a team, and now all of a sudden he's the franchise who has to be protected. They're going to meet whatever narrative they need to meet.
I thought Rex came off like a buffoon too on Saturday night. I thought Rex did not do a good job in that press conference.
Never been his forte. Is that self-awareness has never been his strongest suit. So and I'm a Bengals fan, but I usually don't have an issue with the Jets. But ever since they got rid of Mangini, and ever since it's been kind of the Rex Ryan era, I just have no time or patience for it.
All right. Antonio, have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday night. And for everybody else, hope you come on back to robiswebsite.com all week long. Plenty of shows coming your way. It's going to be a good week. So talk to you again soon. And if you missed our earlier podcast with Brendan and Rachel, check it out at robiswebsite.com. Have a good night, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.